Hey, I'm Dr. Drew, and you're listening to Drilled with Dr. Brady podcast.
Once again, welcome to the Drilled with Dr. Brady podcast.
The Drilled with Dr. Brady podcast.
Dr. Brady. And guess who that is? That's a voice from the past. That's the ghost of...
the ghost of Lowell Granoff.
Lowell Granoff. He's back, everybody. Lowell's back. Lowell, how have you been?
I'm fresh from vacation, so I'm pretty good.
Yeah, you went hunting pigs in Texas.
I did. It was delightful.
You sent me pictures. It sounded like you were in heaven.
It was actually weirdly enough, the name of the ranch that I was on is called Almost Heaven.
Mm.
It's the Granoff Family Hunting Reserve.
It's owned by family members.
Yeah, it's owned by my second cousin.
Okay. What is a second cousin?
My great uncle's son.
Hold on. Hold up. Let's wrap your brain around that. Because I always get second cousin and cousins removed mistaken. And confused.
I'm not entirely sure. I just know that that's factual. I don't know what the other ones mean.
See, I think a cousin once removed is your cousin's child. So your first cousin's child, I believe, fact check me on this if you want. I believe a cousin once removed is your first cousin's child. Second cousin, yes.
Is a great uncle's son.
Or your uncle's
great uncle.
Your great uncle's son.
You come from a big family, so you get this, but my grandfather had 13 siblings.
Zoinks. Zoinks.
So I have a ton of second cousins.
Yeah.
And cousins once removed.
Yeah. Now, second cousins, I believe you can marry.
But I think biologically, it's not going to mess you up too bad.
That makes sense because a cousin once removed seems a little too close to me.
It's too. Yeah, it's not.
There's a lot of
still frowned upon.
There's a lot of DNA shared there. A little too much DNA shared.
Well, you start stacking DNA like that, you just start stacking problems. So,
true.
Like a stacked deck of cards.
That's true. That's true.
Everybody wins.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are gathered here today to welcome Lowell back from a little bit of a vacation.
You let me. I was free for a minute, guys.
We'll see what happens next with Lowell. We'll see what Lowell's up to. We got some good stuff popping in the hopper. I wanted to get to know Lowell a little bit tonight.
Uh-oh.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ask away.
I wanted to get deeply personal.
I have no secrets.
You're about to not. We're going to air it all.
Bring it.
Let's see. Lowell and I share a bond as axemen. Musicians, you would say a guitar is your primary instrument?
Oh, yeah, but for sure. It's
for sure.
The second love of my life. I am maybe very close second love of my life.
Careful. I don't know if Carly listens, but
she does. And
she might feel
threatened. She knows.
She knows. She knows. She might be the mistress and the guitar is the wife.
Yeah, it keeps the marriage fresh.
That's right. That's right. Well... anyways, by the way, did you eat all those Nothing Bundt cakes?
Oh, dude, I wrecked those things.
Aren't those delicious?
Yeah, I even, like, insulted my wife's cupcakes in, like, not on purpose. But I mean, was like, these are the best cupcakes I've ever had. And she's like, what about my cupcakes? And I'm like...
Just say, taste this.
Deal with it.
And then she'd be like, yeah, totally.
No, dude, they were spongy and just perfect. And the frosting was amazing. So thank you for the new addiction.
Yeah, actually. It was Lowell's birthday, and I gave him a bunch of little tiny Nothing Bundt cakes, cupcakes. They're delicious. So funny story, about 3.5 years ago, me and my wife, we inquired to Nothing Bundt Cake, the corporation, to...
You're trying to invest, weren't you?
No, I wanted to buy a franchise. I wanted to purchase a nothing bun cake.
I think it would do great.
Well, it would, and it is, and it's here, and I didn't get to be part of it. My wife was pregnant with our fourth, Mason, and it just seemed like too much. But we got far enough, so they're headquartered in Dallas. If you guys don't know what nothing bun cake is, I mean, I don't know what to tell
you. Crawl out from under your rock and get you some, because it's amazing.
I don't know what to tell you, except for I don't see how you could ever have satisfaction in life.
There was even, like, before I threw the box away.
Yeah.
Like, because it was sitting on our counter for a little bit. I don't have kids, so, I mean, we clean when we clean. But,
Yeah.
I live in an artist household. You saw it. It's an artist household. Like, there's drafting tables and everything everywhere.
Definitely.
But, there was half of one, like a half-eaten cupcake in the box that had been sitting there dried for a couple of days.
Yeah.
And I ate it, and it was still good.
Pound it. So we looked into it, and then we decided it wasn't good timing. But we thought about it, because the closest nothing bundt cake right now is in Beaverton, I think, or like Clackamas area. It's down in so when we wanted a nothing bundt cake, we have to go down to Oregon to get it, which is like a 45-minute drive, especially if there's traffic. And so we thought, man, a nothing bundt cake in Vancouver would just kill it. So we got far enough with the company that they were like sending us non-disclosure forms and like giving us the financials of like different nothing bundt cakes, so we could like assess.
Here's the things.
How much money they make and how much they can produce and what the time commitment is. And we were having these conversations. And then the next step was, they fly you down to Dallas to like meet you, and you meet the CEO, and the CEO wants to meet all the franchisees always. And it's also part of the like interview process. Like they interview you.
You got to be nothing but bundt cake material.
Yeah. So, I remember they told us how you start is, and they know their product, man, because this is like marketing 101. When you have something so desirable, what you should do, and this goes right along with Halo mentality, is you should give it away for free. And that was their marketing strategy. The first 60 days, all we want you to do is make a crap ton of nothing bundt cakes and hand them out to all the businesses around you. Anything that has any business that has employees, anything. And then like a month ago, I'm sitting in my office and I see a nothing bundt cake box on the back table in the break room. And I said, who put that there? And they said, someone just came by and gave it to us. And I said, shut up. And it was true. So nothing bundt cake is now over on 164th. There's a nothing bundt cake close to us now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, someone did it. And I feel like I missed out on an opportunity.
Oh, I'm going to have to go there.
I would have moved in to the actual store location and just lived there.
Just had a cot.
Yeah. Just ate nothing bundt cakes.
Just pour the batter in my mouth.
All day long. That's right. You know, even the cake is, I mean, the cream cheese frosting is ridiculous, but even the cake by itself is like super perfect.
It was serendipity, because my favorite kind of cake ever since I was a little child is a bundt cake. My mom used to make them.
Yeah.
I have a bundt cake pan at home.
Yeah.
It's just yellow, cake with like chocolate frosting was my jam, dude. I just love it. You know what?
And the anatomical shape of a bundt cake is optically desirable. I don't know why. Lumps in the humps.
Not to mention bumps. Anatomically convenient.
Yes. I don't think I agreed to that without thinking about what you just said. Okay. Let's get back to music. So like I was saying before the nothing bundt cake rant and tangent, me and Lowell share a bond. In fact, one of the things that was interesting that I found serendipitous as well was when I met you at Guitar Center, ran into you randomly.
And with my father.
After you were a patient of mine, but before we had created Halo together. And I ran into him and we were talking about guitars, and I knew that we had that affinity together. But I wanted to talk to you about something I've never talked to you about before.
Okay.
I want to know your influences.
Oh, like musically?
Let's start with this. Let's start with, who are your top five favorite guitar players all time?
I mean,
I'll share mine.
Okay.
If you want. I can go first if you want.
Or sure,
you
go first.
You want me to go first?
Sure.
Okay, listen. Number one, and I'm going to tell you, admittedly, number one for me is Jimmy Page, Led Zeppelin.
Oh, yeah, dude, Jimmy.
Jimmy Page. Now, in all fairness, as I think about my list, I do not listen to a lot of Jimmy Page on the regular currently. I think there's a little bit of nostalgia there where Jimmy Page was like one of the first great guitar players that I like came into contact with. Like I heard Led Zeppelin and I wanted to learn every Led Zeppelin song on guitar, but I was mesmerized by Jimmy Page. So I think that was kind of like, he kind of put a spell on me. Next would be for me, probably Eric Clapton. And I do listen to some Clapton from time to time, more so than Jimmy Page. I'm going to put in, and then the last three are in no particular order because I don't know how to order these. But John Mayer, I know he's modern.
Your body is a wonderland.
Yep, I know. Yep, uh-huh. Make fun. Yep, bring it. Bring it. That's fine. That's fine. But I don't. Have you seen John Mayer has a TikTok that's very active, and he teaches people how to play his songs. He gives little tips on how to play his songs.
I've seen his TikTok. Yeah,
it's amazing, dude.
No, he kind of went from being a joke to being super legit. Like he did, as far as like being regarded by other guitar players. I am very active in the guitar player community.
Yeah,
it just is what it is. I'm, you know, people know who I am.
Yeah,
no, I'm they do.
Kind of a big deal.
I would say a medium deal, but like yeah, he's turned the bend. You know what I mean? Like he's like coming around now. He's doing some just wild ruckusy gigs, and it's actually pretty good. So
well, and he's the front man for the Grateful Dead now. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, he's also a Stevie Ray Vaughan disciple. So
right, yeah. So I mean, and I've seen him in concert twice. He's just amazing and an undeniable talent that I think is up there with the greats. Jimi Hendrix, to me, I got to put him in there. That's four. And then I like Prince. That's a recent addition. I didn't really realize how good of a guitar player Prince was until probably after he died. Maybe right before he died, I started getting into him a little bit. That's a good top five to work with. Oh, wait, did I say Brian May?
You did not.
Okay, Brian May is up there too.
Yeah, Brian May's on mine.
Yeah, Brian May of Queen is.
I just love Queen. It's Queen's music are anthems of victory, like yeah. Literally from stem to stern. It is epic. It is grandiose. I mean, I would love to have my life story soundtracked by Queen if you know death and like time were not a factor.
Yeah. Yeah, and Queen, Brian May for me was all about, because then I got to think about Slash too, the phrasing, it's phraseology, meaning it's not just necessarily the complexity of what they play, it's just like how they fit the notes in to match the song in such a harmonic and melodic way, melodious way?
Sure.
You know what I'm talking about. It's an amazing accomplishment. So I put Slash in there too. I don't think Slash is one of the greatest guitar players, but I mean some of his guitar solos are timeless, and the phrasing of the phrasing of the solos is what's kind of like wow, that's he works within a pentatonic scale and he makes it sound like he's not, right? That's what I'm talking about.
No, yeah, yeah. And like with Brian May, it's not pentatonic. He plays with like a lot of harmonic minor, yeah. And like Phrygian and stuff. And these are like, this might sound like gibberish, but these are the guitar scales that lend themselves to be more triumphant than say like a minor blues solo. You know, this is the stuff that sounds really epic. As a guitar player, that's like for solos, that's where I live.
Okay.
Is like in harmonic minor, E Phrygian, Lydian, like the really juicy stuff. Of course, you know,
we're going deep theory now.
I can slap some blues on anybody too, but man, five, it's gonna be hard to narrow it down to five.
Okay, I've given you I think seven and I cheated, but let's talk about your five. Let's talk about your top five.
Okay, well,
and then we're gonna talk about your top five favorite dentists of all time.
Okay that's a short list.
I might be all five choices. That's fine. I'll take that.
Actually, no, I've met quite a few dentists over the course of my tenure here, and
I'm all five of your choices.
Sure, you signed my paychecks.
That's right. That's right.
Well, we'll do this chronologically.
Okay.
When I was young, my dad was a musician.
Not necessarily in order of like the...
I couldn't do in order of importance. So okay. I love... So guitar is such a huge part of my life that the list is long, but I'll give you like just the highlights.
Okay.
When I was young, I was growing up and there was a... My dad played in a band and that band toured.
What did your dad play?
He played guitar. He sang in a band.
Okay.
He was not my influence. There was a guitar player.
Duly noted.
No, he had tried teaching my cousins and my brother and like all these people, and he just kind of failed. And by the time I got interested in music, he was just done teaching people how to play guitar. I learned how to play his keyboard first, but his guitar player in that band, a dude named Bob Sather.
I thought you were going to say Bob Saget.
No, Bob Sather definitely, he had the guitar moves, as I would call them.
Okay.
Like he was a good lead guitar player, very savvy, and he had some swank on stage, and he wore like cowboy boots with one spur, and he had like this cool beard and hair and stuff. So I'd say he kind of led me to it, but then it was, you know, I got into music just like anyone else. You know, my entry point was like Metallica.
Okay.
Like, you know, I remember my brother.
But Kirk Hammett is a great guitar player.
Not Kurt Hammett, James Hetfield for me.
Oh, you like Hetfield better than Hammett?
Yeah, that's why I have one of the strongest right hands in the business is because of James Hetfield. Like, I loved everything he did. You know,
that's why you have one of the strongest right hands.
You better believe it.
That's why.
Moving on. That's this hand, buddy. and my dexterity, my man.
Okay, moving on.
James Hetfield for sure. Okay, and then that took me down a trail. Like, metal was kind of my entry point. Metal and punk rock were my entry points. I really just enjoyed...
How old?
Like 11.
Okay, I was like 13 when I picked up a guitar for the first time.
I picked up a guitar at about 8. Okay. I didn't really like the bug didn't get me until about 11, 12. You know, when school, you know, and it's kind of cool. I started a band with a friend and it was...
Yeah.
We had a good time. Geez, this is really hard.
I should have prepped you.
No, it's fine. Jeff Hanneman, guitar player for Slayer. Love him. Like, absolutely. These guys, you're probably not going to know a ton of these dudes.
No, I wouldn't know him by name, but I know enough Slayer to know that it's not just a pretty name.
No.
They got some talent behind that.
Oh, yeah, dude. And, like, Tom Araya and, like, basically there's two guitar players in Slayer. There's Kerry King and there's Jeff Hanneman. Kerry King was like the willy 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 wham bar whammy bar whammy bar, yeah. And then like Hanneman would just write these just beautiful melodic solos over
the
stuff.
The phrasing,
yeah. It was just his phrasing was good, and then it was kind of like started working in a backwards direction at that point. You know, I was in a Nirvana, and you know, I was in all these bands, but none of the guitar players really like I didn't hear anything. Thin Lizzy's guitar players, you know, there was a few of them, but they were always good. Most notably, Gary Moore.
Okay.
Actually, weirdly enough, Kurt Hammett bought Gary Moore's guitar.
Okay.
For like $500,000, and that's what he plays on tour now.
Wow.
Because Gary Moore
know that.
Is a badass, you know, too. Like, he's turbo.
I heard once that Lenny Kravitz bought a pair of Jimi Hendrix pants. For like 150 grand or something like that.
I think that's on Vice. I think they have that thing where they goes through and he's got a couple things. He's like got some Muhammad Ali shoes and stuff like that.
Yeah, like they're like some purple bell bottoms or something like that that Hendrix wore.
I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, if you just could do that, wouldn't you?
I mean, it'd be stinky, but
if money was not an object, you could get some cool stuff.
I mean, I'd rather have his guitar than his pants. It seems that's where the man's junk's been. That's. That's a hollowed ground.
So we got Hetfield, we got Gary Moore.
Okay.
Most notably, if you listen to the Thin Lizzy song, The Black Rose, he does a dueling guitar solo with himself. And it is just...
It's like playing chess against yourself.
But it's like if a chess master played chess with himself.
Interesting.
It's just ridiculous.
Interesting.
It's very... it's very harmonic minor, but very British because he's British. So it's kind of got like that, this kind of British, medieval British feel. And then I got kind of into blues for a while. And then, you know, but I was going way back on blues, like dudes like Son House, dudes like Robert Johnson.
I don't know any of those people.
They're amazing.
I'm sure they're great.
Lead Belly, just really good songwriters and really amazing guitar players. Sun House was amazing. Jack White is another one that's really big. That, because then I went backwards, but then it kind of like, then I was like in the era of.
So that's kind of a modern one, like on par with my John Mayer call.
Yeah, yeah. It was
Jack White's not a child of the 60s or 50s or 70s.
As the metal bug faded, the like the bluesy garage rock.
Yeah.
I mean, I was in a touring garage rock band for like 9 years.
Yeah, I mean, Jack White was like some kind of weird reincarnation of Led Zeppelin to me. I feel like he's like Robert Plant and Jimmy Page all in one.
If they were more punk rock.
Yeah. But like, I feel like his voice kind of reminds me of Robert Plant a little bit. But he definitely, I mean, the dude shreds, dude. And he writes amazing music.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, the White Stripes were great. Did you watch the movie It Might Get Loud?
No.
Turn this off and go watch that. It's the cool, if you're a guitar, it's a love note to guitar players. They basically take Jimmy Page, Jack White, and The Edge, and they put them in a room together.
I have seen that.
It's beautiful.
I have seen that. And they talk about each other's songs. And they
just hang out and talk about all sorts of stuff. But there's a pick, just if you want to see how brilliant Jack White is. He sits down by a four-track recorder with a microphone in his guitar, writes a song like right there, records it, and it's an awesome song. And then he just hands the tape to like the dude, and he's like, here you go, man. See you later.
Yeah, The Edge is a good guitar player, too.
He's amazing.
He doesn't get a lot of credit, I think, when you start talking about the greats. I don't know that he deserves that kind of
status.
No,
he's a sonic architect. You got to kind of like...
Sonic architect. Ooh, I like that.
You got to kind of think of him like... You got me talking about guitar stuff. It's my favorite subject. You got to think of him as like that. Not as like this most prolific player, but like his skills lie elsewhere.
What he did, like his tone and the way he figured out how to make certain, make a guitar sound different than what anyone else has made a guitar sound like, for sure.
There's two kinds of guitar players in this world, man. There's sorcerers and there's wizards. Sorcerers learn the spells. Our sorcerers are born with innate talent and then they use that innate magic to do their thing, which is, there's some people that are like that. Wizards are ones that had to learn the spells.
Yeah.
And then translate that. There's different kinds of guys. And I would say that he's definitely more in the sorcerer category. He just has this innate sound that he's always constantly searching for. And that's his avenue to find it, is he's just got all these effects.
Yeah.
I'm really into guitar effects like you would not even believe. But you might believe.
I know. I know all about it. Okay, so we like Jack White. That makes your list.
Jack White, James Hetfield.
Gary Moore,
Jeff Hanneman.
Mm-hmm. We're at four. Who else can we add to your list?
Oh, we're not even started.
Who else gets that coveted fifth spot?
Man, that's tough.
You think about that. Let me tell you who I'm leaving out. I'm leaving out the Joe Satrianis, the Eric Johnsons, the Steve Vais. Because they all kind of, I lump them in kind of a very similar type of category where lots of these guys don't really have like a band that plays like traditional, like a lot of them are instrumental. There's one song by Eric Johnson called Cliffs of Dover.
Yeah, Cliffs of Dover.
Which is like, I mean, you want to feel like you're never going to be a good guitar player, go listen to Cliffs of Dover. There's no words and it's like 8 minutes long and it's redunculous.
It's a good entry point for shred guitar.
Yeah, and it has that riff that ding 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 ding. Anyway, I'm sure that translates well over the airwaves. But I'm leaving them out, even though technically I believe they are probably some of the best guitar players. But to me, it's all about like, well, what music made me feel something, right? And that's different than just like who's the best? I mean, like Eddie Van Halen, missing from my list. I like Van Halen. Eddie Van Halen did things.
Eddie Van Halen's on my list. That was my next one.
Was it? He's great. I mean, I wouldn't challenge that at all. But to me, when I listened to Van Halen, it was fun.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, I never wanted to go learn a Van Halen song.
Oh, I did. Man.
Except for Hot for Teacher.
I can play Hot for Teacher.
Hot for Teacher is a great song.
Rap out of Hot for Teacher, but
I did like it when they covered Roy Orbison's
Pretty Woman.
Pretty Woman, that's a great cover.
I like Unchained a lot too. Like,
okay,
yeah, it's a cool song.
Yeah,
but you know, Van Halen was definitely my, well, you know, I'd done the Hanneman and like, you know, kind of thing, kind of got me into that shred stuff. Definitely Eddie Van Halen. What I liked about him is it was the shreddy kind of guitar playing, but there was a lot of swing and boogie woogie in it. You know what I mean? There was like a lot of swing. They were basically playing swing music and like boogie woogie music, just fast and ramped up.
Okay.
So it was dancey. It was still heavy, but it was danceable. You know what I mean? Get your butt moving.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and with David Lee Roth as a front man, that was a deadly combination. Deadly combination. As he was great. I saw them in concert probably 5 years ago, four.
Don't forget Alex, dude. Dude, man, Alex Van Halen.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. That guy was a maniac.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it's kind of the same thing. You know,
he was their bass player, right?
Drummer, dude. It was Eddie Van Halen's brother.
Well, the bass player now is his son, Wolfgang.
Yeah, Wolfgang.
Right? And Alex was the drummer. It was, obviously. Can't really be Van Halen anymore.
Inevitably, any guy that gets deep into guitar and starts to shred hits their Yngwie Malmsteen phase. Luckily, I got in and out pretty quick.
Yeah. Again, one of the people where I'm like, it's really cool.
Yeah,
not
but
my thing.
It's tasteless craziness. Yeah. It's just very challenging. And if your mind is one of those minds that seeks out challenges, that's you like Eric Dover. Or, you know, Eric Johnson and Cliffs of Dover, like, that song compared to, like, something like, you know, A Rising Force is nothing. I mean, just as far as sheer technical skill.
Yeah.
You can face some kind of mutant that grew in some basement in Sweden.
That might be exactly how that happened.
If we kind of roll forward a little bit, there's two more guys. Definitely Dimebag Darrell from Pantera.
Okay.
I took a lot from Dimebag Darrell. Okay. I love this, like, because I like guys like Billy Gibbons, and I love ZZ Top.
Okay.
And then, but then, you know, like, Dimebag Darrell was the modern iteration of that Southern music, which I grew up with, because both my parents are Southern, and, you know, it resonated with me. And then there's a dude named, you won't know this guy, because he's really obscure, but I absolutely love his phrasing, and I love his guitar playing. This guy named... Mark Ribot, and he's Tom Waits' guitar player, and it's just he is devastatingly good.
Yeah, I know who Tom Waits is.
Yeah, he plays these weird little guitars, and he just makes these awesome sounds. And
I mean, I think Tom Morello can be in that kind of category too, where he does some
sorcerer. But I would say but Tom Morello went to music school, so like
but he like has these solos that are just him like slapping his hand on certain pickups with his. It's like
I saw him do a solo where he pulled the thing out and just did that.
Yeah,
he pulled his guitar cable out and just touched it.
yeah. But he finds these weird things that kind of sound really, really good. You know, for what they're doing.
He grew up to be exactly what he sung that he was singing against.
Okay, now here's the question, Lowell. You have to get a tramp stamp of a certain band's logo on your body, tattooed. Who's the band? I'll tell you, for me right now, it's Weezer. The Weezer W. I get that tramp stamp tomorrow. No problem.
Oh, my gosh. That's a tough question.
What is a band you love so much that you would be willing to emblazon it on the small of your back?
That's tough. Wu-Tang Clan.
I knew you were going to say that. Wu-Tang.
Dude, Wu-Tang is amazing.
Wu-Tang is amazing. That's true. That's true.
We didn't talk about when I got
into rap. Both W's, right?
Yeah.
You get your W, you get your Wu-Tang. I get my Weezer tramp stamp. Sounds like a bro date, dude.
Sounds like. I would get a tramp stamp just to be ridiculous because I'm that kind of dude.
I asked my wife not too long ago. I said, what would you do? Like literally. This isn't like a what would you do? And she's like, oh, Brady. Like, no, what would you literally do? How would you react if you saw me get in the shower like you have a million times and I have a Weezer tramp stamp? What do you do? And she didn't even know how to answer that. She's like, but she was like worried that she was like, are you going to do that? Do I have to be worried about that? And I was like, maybe. Maybe you do need to worry about that. I don't know. It sounds a lot of fun. And now that you want to get your Wu-Tang tramp stamp, maybe I get my Weezer tramp stamp, and it's going to be wild.
Dude, Enter the 36 Chambers, amazing album. Just absolutely stunning.
Oh, the Wu-Tang.
Yeah, I've got it on vinyl.
Ooh. Ooh.
I have a pretty good vinyl collection.
Nice.
Dude. I can't wait to have enough space to like have it all out.
Oh, music is what binds us together. Let me ask you this. Are you suspicious of people who don't like music?
Yes.
Isn't that weird? I am too.
I'm like, suspicious of a lot of things.
I kind
of
don't want to know you. Like, if you don't like music, I don't even know, like what do you do? Like, you have to be like a serial killer to me.
Yeah, that's definitely some antisocial kind of behavior. I also don't like people that don't like dogs.
Yep.
I'm immediately distrustful. Now, if a dog, like...
Now, what about animals? Whether, like, I'm not... Dogs aren't my thing, but I like cats, or I like, I don't know, lizards or something like that.
How do you not like dogs?
I mean, I'm with you.
I'm hung up on dogs, dude.
Yeah. Dogs are great. My in-laws just moved to Camas. So they moved from Las Vegas to Camas, and now my in-laws live like 10 minutes away. It's great. It's fantastic. In fact, my mother-in-law is an avid listener of Drilled. What's up, Jan? How you doing? But to me, in my secret plotting mind, I'm like, well, this is now my moment to buy a dog. Because my wife's argument to me was always...
Who's going to watch it if you go somewhere?
If we go somewhere, what are you going to put it in a boarding... Like, you know, put it in a boarding school thing, like a, you know, whatever. And now we have a place where we could drop off a dog.
That's definitely been a hamper for my vacation plans with me and my wife actually taking a vacation.
Because you got two dogs.
Well, when we lived in Alaska, it was no problem. I had plenty of friends that I trusted illicitly that I'd just be like, hey, come stay at my house. Everything's free. Watch, take care of the dogs.
Yeah.
I'll stock the liquor cabinet. I'll stock food. You'll have everything you need. Just come over and
watch the dogs.
Watch the dogs. I just don't have like that here, you know, just because I just don't have like a lot of people that I would just illicitly. Well, I didn't at the that point. I do now, but like there was a long period where I just didn't even would trust that much. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Totally.
My fur babies.
Yeah. People who don't like dogs. Here's another theory I have. Some people are irrationally, they kind of irrationally despise certain things. And I find that these people, I'll give you some examples in a second. Tell me if this theory brings up anyone in your mind.
Okay.
Okay. There are people who viscerally and adamantly despise country music. It creates in them, an absolute visceral, violent reaction if you have a country music song on or a country music station being played. And I find these people to be, for the most part, angry people. Difficult to be happy. And I know a few of them in my own personal life that have this violent reaction to country music. And I share this with my staff, and immediately a couple of my staff are like, oh, for sure. I got people who, because we have a country music day we like put a country music thing on Pandora. It's beautiful. It's happy. It's fun. Country music is happy music, right? For the most part, it's happy, fun music.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely accessible.
Yeah. Relatable. Yeah, absolutely.
It's John Everyman music. You know what
That's
I mean?
Right. That's exactly right. That's exactly what it is. And so I find people suspect. Sometimes I think it's like people who just hate things that are universally enjoyed. You know, like if like a hipster doofus kind of person who's like I just don't like things.
Yeah, they're just contrarian. They're always like, if you know, they have to like have the, you know, if you know who the band is, that they immediately don't like them, or if if it's something that's universally loved. I get this is the thing, dude. Like I remember when I was in my 20s. And even in my teens, metal was the way. Anything but metal. You know, that the thing is when you're like 19 and, you know, you're in your early 20s, I find a lot of what I call true believers. They latch into something. That is their world. Anything outside of that world threatens their world. Hence, they hate it.
It becomes part of their identity.
It becomes part of their identity.
Absolutely.
One of the things that I've kind of let go of entirely in my life is that any kind of mentality like that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to base... I'm not going to judge you based on things you like unless they're like heinous. You know, like I love genocide. Well, you need to go away. You know, dude.
Explain your position further for me on genocide.
Yeah.
Well, it's juvenile. That's the thing. Yeah. That's exactly what you're saying. It's a juvenile mentality to say, like, you don't like all country music? You're saying there's not a Garth Brooks song that you don't think is your jam?
Oh, that was my Garth Brooks and my boy.
Like, there's not a freaking, like, Rascal Flatts song that you're like, boom.
I'm not the hugest Rascal Flatts fan, but they do have some jams, dude, for
like,
real.
Like, freaking Reba, dude? Nights of Jordan. Yeah. I mean, like,
I watched Reba when it was on TV when she had her sitcom, and I was into redheads.
She's an American gem.
I was into redheads, dude.
Yeah. She's amazing, dude. Anyways. Okay, so also back to the dogs thing. This country music theory I have translates to people. It's kind of when you have these weird visceral reactions to anything. So I know someone who hates dogs, like, badly, like, hates them. Won't go to people's houses if there's a dog. Won't, like, if they're running and they're jogging and there's a dog, they will try to, like they'll, like, quickly, like, kick a dog. And I'm just like, and my experience is that these people who have these visceral type of reactions that are, I would consider to be irrational, like, not all dogs are terrible. Some dogs might have been bad, but not all dogs, right?
I don't think there's anything as such a thing as a bad dog, just bad owners.
No, there's bad dogs, dude. There's bad dogs that poop everywhere and kill things and chew things. Anyway, different topic. What I'm trying to say is that my theory on this is, it's a juvenile mentality. When you have this kind of visceral reaction, it's someone who hasn't got to the point, they haven't graduated in the formation of their brain. And some people carry this into adulthood. They haven't graduated to the formation of their brain that says, yeah, it's been country music's fine. Whatever. Not a big deal. I can listen to that. Instead of like, oh, turn it off. This is terrible. Like, it just doesn't make any sense why someone would say something like that. It's not rational to me.
I can't think of a style of music or a genre, which I kind of, one thing that I hate is subgenres of music where there's like, metal music is really bad about it. There's just like 1,000 subgenres of music, but I don't think there's a genre of music that I universally dislike. I don't think there's one. I listen to everything, dude.
I would say like death metal is hard for me.
Ooh, I get into it.
But there are certainly times where I'm like, yeah, I could use a pump me up.
I did a death metal band for a while. It was rad, but like,
oh,
like
I can see that. I can see that happening. But you know, some people listen. I actually don't have too much of a problem with it. I can't listen to it for long periods of time.
Oh man, like yeah, you know? It just depends on my mood.
But you're right. There is no genre where I'm like, I mean, super offensive lyrics sometimes. Super, super offensive.
It depends. Now, if it's just gratuitous, even then, sometimes if it's gratuitous, but it's like in the spirit of just being goofy, you know, I'm into that, you know. Yeah. There's some stuff. I mean, it's the same. There's extremes everywhere, but I listen to boy bands. I love NSYNC. I'm more of an NSYNC fan than a Backstreet Boy fan.
Oh, I'm a One Direction fan.
There you go.
One Direction.
Yeah, dude, I don't mind One Direction.
One Direction's amazing, dude.
We went to...
amazing.
Me and my wife went for... like, one of the things I've been trying to do is when I worked my old job, my wife and me kind of worked opposing schedules, so we never got to really chill together. Because I'd be working or, you know, because I was doing a day job and then I was doing, like, Halo stuff and, you know, she would work till, like, 8:30 at night. We just never got to hang out.
Yeah.
So one of the things we've been doing since everything's kind of changed is we go out to dinner and she was kind of feeling blue and COVID, you know, and her, where she works is stressing her out. So I'm like, let's go eat at a place we've never eaten before. So we went to this Korean town barbecue place.
I like where this is going.
And it was awesome. Well, they had the grill there and on the table and they just bring you raw meat and you just throw it on there and cook it yourself.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
I like that.
Kind of had a Papa Murphy's thing, which I have like an ethical problem with because you're basically buying food that you have to cook yourself.
Yeah, but I hate Papa Murphy's.
Yeah, I'm not into it.
I hate that, dude.
I have a philosophical like problem.
And here I am talking about irrational hatred toward things, and I'm like, hey, Papa Murphy's could die in a fire.
It doesn't make sense. You have to buy the pizza to cook it yourself. I don't get it.
It is quite illogical, and it doesn't save you money.
You don't save any money.
It's like, for them, it's great. Like, I don't have to buy an oven. People just buy this. Sure.
Well, this place, but the thing was, is they had a ton of TVs in there, and they had Korean beer, which I'd never had before, which was delightful, actually. And
okay.
So we're sitting there, and every TV's got K-pop on.
I love K-pop.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
I started noticing
who's
a lot of patterns.
Who's the new K-pop Korean band? Dynamite.
I don't remember. It's been a while since I've...
A little funky song. Oh, why can't I name it? BTS.
There you go.
That's the Korean, but they jam. They're good. But I feel like there's a formula for boy bands.
And it's definitely formulaic, but the formula works.
So it's this 1-3-5 chord progression that just kind of like works in different keys, whatever you want it to do.
And usually there's, they are kind of like the four on the floor. There's usually a very similarity in the beats that they use and in the progressions that they use. Mm-hmm. Pop music's formula too. I mean, you listen to like anything on the radio, literally anything on the radio. I mean, right now, a lot of it, you're going to hear these same patterns kind of repeating, and ever since Billie Eilish came out, now you have a lot of whisper vocals,
Yes.
Like everywhere.
Listen to this. I'm trying to get my band. Hold on. Let me see if I can hook up the Bluetooth because I want everyone to hear this. I'm trying to get my band to cover this. This is a mashup that I am really, really into right now. There's these TikTok accounts that have these mashups. Oh, man.
I remember the days of the mashup. One of my good friends is a dubstep, DJ, I think that's how you say it. And he did marvelous mashups during the age of mashups.
Hold on. I'm thinking. There he is. Got it. Okay. Check this out. Let's put this up a little bit. Make sure this is going in your ears and not in your butt.
Don't threaten me with a good time.
You hearing that?
Yeah. That's pretty rad. Is that dude.
Pumped Up Kicks.
The Pumped Up Kicks song.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah. Have fun with this YouTube algorithm.
Yeah.
Let's swallow this.
Obviously, I would sing this. Because I'm kind of... the Beyonce type. Anyways, I love it, dude. This guy, what's his TikTok? I want to give him credit. By NX Music, BYNX Music on TikTok. This dude just freaking does these mashups. Hold on, I'll play another one. Let's see what this one is. Okay, let's see what this one is. Oh, this is a good one.
Okay. I thought it was Creed for a minute.
No.
Is that Lordy?
Yeah.
Lordy.
What is that?
If you put an I on the end of it, I'm calling it Lordy.
There's an E on the end of it.
Whatever. It's still Lordy.
It could be Lordy. Hold on, get in the chorus. So the good thing is we already do Sugar We're Going Down. So just adding in the Royals vocals would be super easy to do. And when you get these cool ideas, I mean, you're just like, boom, it fits.
No, we actually, cool. My band is doing a mashup of our own. We are doing Chris Isaak's Wicked Game. We're singing
Sultry.
We're singing Believe over it.
Believe
by Cher. Do you believe in love after love? Love after love.
Yeah, that's
it works.
Great. That's
it weirdly great. Works, dude.
Listen, I love it. I got shut down because one time my band, we were gonna do Florence and the Machine. Oh, what's that song that they do? Shake It Off or Shake It Up? Shake It Off. Shake It Off, Shake It Off, Shake It Off. And I noticed that it eerily matches with America by Neil Diamond. On the boats and on the planes, we're coming to America. Dude, I've never had one of my suggestions get shot down in my band so fast. Again, visceral reaction to Neil Diamond. I can't trust that person
anymore. You gotta rule with an iron fist, Brady.
I do. You're right about that.
Like you do. It's like my dad used to always say, that we had to obey the chain of command. And the chain of command was the chain that he would go and beat us with if we didn't do what he told us to do.
Yeah. I might have to resort to that. It was one of my best ideas because I was like, I showed people. And it was a real gut punch because I was certain that people would listen to this and be like, oh, yeah, that's going to slay when we perform that live. Nope, 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 nope. Shut down. Everyone hates
visceral,
it.
Visceral, violent reactions.
Yeah. But it's Neil Diamond. It's like, first of all, Neil Diamond, name someone else who's written a hit song every decade since the 50s. I mean, Neil Diamond's an amazing songwriter. Amazing songwriter. And there will be no debate about this. But the idea that we could, like, mash this up, and she was like, you're going to ruin that Florence and the Machine song. I was like, but it's Florence and the Machine. Like, it's fine to ruin that.
It's fine to sully. This is upon the sacrifice upon the altar of the Neil Diamond. Yeah.
Also, America by Neil Diamond is about like welcoming and it's inclusive and it like, you know, whatever the politically correct culture. This is like bringing everyone over here.
Oh, dude, like Sweet Caroline's a cultural
I thought my liberal lead singer would be like softened by that with her bleeding heart. And she was not. It's black as ice.
Chisel off ice for your drink.
That's right. Yeah.
No, it's a cool idea, and I definitely like doing share songs, so.
Okay, let's wrap this up. We've done enough tonight. Let's do this. We have to do a secret word. For those who don't know, the secret word is worth $500 of free dental work at my office. We're going to choose the fifth person. That's been working quite well. The fifth person to message us is going to get the goods. If you can't use the $500 yourself, you can give that to someone else who can. And that's a nice gift to give someone.
I've got a good secret word.
Oh, lol.
And it's not going to be obvious. You're actually going to have to listen to it in the episode.
Oh.
Lowell's number one, the first guitar player I mentioned that was on my list, my top five list of favorite guitar players.
Oh, I'm even like, wait, who was that? Got it.
Yeah. Okay.
I won't mention it. So you have to go back into the episode, guys. This is a first for Drilled.
We're working it out. We're
if
making
you
a different
fast
cult.
Forwarded to just right now, you just got Rickrolled. You just got bamboozled right now by Lowell. You have to go back and find out what was Lowell's. No, I like this trend. Go back into the episode.
Just think of a detail from the episode. Yeah. Yeah, like figure it out. We said it plenty. We talked about it plenty. So
you have to, the name of the guitar player that Lowell had as number one.
First mentioned.
On his list. I got it. I remember it now. And go back and listen to it. I don't know where it was in the episode. Somewhere. Go listen to the whole episode.
Share it with your friends. Help
so
help you.
For the first time ever, we're not giving you the secret word. You got to go back and listen to it. But if you listen to the whole episode, you'll probably know who it was.
Yeah. Homie don't play, man.
What if they what do they give him my number one?
Well, that's not following directions.
That's right. So the secret word is not Jimmy Page. I'll tell you that. It's not Jimmy Page. It's someone else. All right. Hey, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Please. You know what? Could you guys do me a favor and leave us a review on iTunes? That would be swell.
Or Spotify.
Or Spotify. Do they do reviews on Spotify?
I believe so, maybe.
I don't think so, dude.
Well, just share and love and
no, but specifically, like. I would like our listeners to go onto your phone, if you have an iPhone and you have the iTunes app, go and leave a 5-star review and a
heartwarming comment.
Yeah, something about
my eyes.
Lowell's eyes would be good. My six-pack abs.
They're under there somewhere.
They're in there, dude. It's true.
Just waiting.
They're in there. All right. We would appreciate that. We will be joined next week by somebody. Probably Lowell. Maybe Lowell.
Probably me.
Could be
someone else.
Cardi B. I'll tweet at her, see if she wants to come on.
Awesome. I definitely want to be here for that. I doubt it, but.
Oh, man. All right. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Drilled. Thank you for your patronage. We really appreciate it. If you have the ability to donate to the Halo Dental Network, go to halodentalnetwork.org. If you scroll down a little bit, there's a little donate button. And we would like to encourage all of our listeners to donate whatever you can on a reoccurring basis. We have figured out that we can do 10 times more free dentistry for people with the Halo Dental Network, 10 times more than the dollar amount that we're given. So for every $5 you give us, we can do $50 of dental work. This is kind of game changing when you start getting to bigger numbers, but the more you donate to us, the better we can serve people. And we just have no end in sight for the demand that Halo can provide for people. So please consider donating to the halodentalnetwork.org. It is how we, it's one of our main ways of funding what we do. And the more we have, the more we will put one, we'll put 100% of these proceeds into doing free cases for people who need it. Anything else to add, Lowell?
Just be fantastic always. And
Lowell said it. Later, guys. Bye.